Another side of the opioid crisis is happening in jails and prisons across the country, and it gets a lot less attention than national efforts to hold drug makers accountable. The standard of care to treat opioid use disorder is called medication-assisted treatment, or MAT, and that can include drugs like methadone. But less than 1% of jails and prisons across the country provide their incarcerated population with treatment. For many, that lack of care means inmates can experience painful and sudden withdrawal and then face a much higher chance of overdosing and dying after they're released. Deanna King is a policy manager at the Drug Policy Alliance, and I asked her what happens when someone addicted to opioids gets to an average correctional facility.
It depends on where you're incarcerated. We could talk about the Keep Rikers program. When you go into that space, you are screened for substance use disorder. If you do have an opioid dependency, you're placed into the Keep program where you're medically detoxed and then placed on an MAT program based on your needs. And that program's been in existence for over 3 decades. And that's the best case scenario. You're still incarcerated. If you are in a facility that doesn't have access to these medications, you're not giving any medical detox. What they're likely to do is give you medications to treat the symptoms. So you'll be given Tylenol or Pepto-Bismol to deal with the nausea. But you are forced to go through a really heinous withdrawal process in a space that's already egregious when it comes to providing medical care. So you're in a cell. Sometimes they'll place you in solitary if you become disruptive. And being disruptive in this context is just displaying physical signs of discomfort and illness. So they can push you in isolation where you're forced to go through this withdrawal without any support.
What about federal regulations? I mean, are there any federal regulations around opioid addiction treatment inside jails and prisons?
So when I first started looking into this issue, I did not know how restrictive OTP regulations are.
And what are OTP regulations?
So opioid treatment programs. These are the spaces that can provide methadone in a community setting. They're the methadone clinics that we have that we see in our communities. My assumption was that you can just get the medication and provide it in this facility, but that's not the case, because federal regulation demands that you have to have certain structures created in the facility in order to prescribe this medication. You need to have safes. You need to have like proper security. It's overly burdensome. So it imposes this cost on the facilities that they would not incur if it was just like a deregulated medication.
Now, what happens if inmates don't get the correct treatment that they need? I know you said some of them could be put in solitary confinement, but that's at the intake stage, mm-hmm. right? What happens in the long term if these inmates don't get any type of adequate treatment for their addictions?
So the rate of fatal overdose in this population is enormously high. The number that's most reported is people who have justice involvement are 40 times more likely to overdose in the 2 weeks following release. So we're seeing these egregious overdose rates because when you are incarcerated and you're not given access to maintenance therapy in the form of MAT, and if you don't continue to use while you're inside, your tolerance is going to decrease. And if you decide to go back into the community and use again and use at the same rate, your likelihood of overdosing is much higher.
What about Rhode Island? They've been doing some interesting treatment options there. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Rhode Island, I think, was one of the first states in the nation. They allow the use of all forms of medication-assisted treatment. So you have methadone and buprenorphine and Vivitrol if that person wants it. So that there's no breakdown in treatment. And that continuum of care is really important because if you have that gap in care and you return to use, that's when we can lose people.
I mean, there are some people who probably ask, well, why is it the responsibility of a jail or a prison to provide this type of treatment?
Well, prisons and jails are responsible for providing medical care to people that they are detaining. Like, these medications are not a specialty form of medication. It's an essential component of medical care. So I want to start there. And they have a responsibility to this population. If we're going to continue to criminalize substance use, then you need to be able to provide the methods of care in that space.
So earlier this year, New York was considering a bill which, if it passed, would require all state prisons and correctional facilities to offer medication to inmates who were suffering from opioid use disorder. What happened there?
So we worked on this bill for the past 2 years or so because we wanted to address what was happening in the counties as well what was happening in the state correctional department. We advocated for the bill really aggressively. We had a lot of allies join, and we were able to get it passed in the Senate. But unfortunately, it stalled in the assembly and did not pass before the session came to a close.
What do you think is the holdup here? I mean, the opioid crisis in particular has gotten so much attention. The companies that manufacture these drugs have now been held to judicial standards. They've been sued and they've had to pay significant funds for that. So what's the holdup?
Unfortunately, we still have a lot of people who aren't aware of what these medications are. And these people have positions of power to dictate what happens in these facilities. So prior to the end of session, the New York State Sheriff's Association released the opposition memo against the bill saying that they consider buprenorphine to be contraband. And we know people who have brought in buprenorphine to their people who are incarcerated because it's a medication that's necessary. And if the county jails aren't providing it, then people are taking this risk of bringing it inside to their families. If you made it accessible and created a program, you would have control over how this medication is dispensed. We also had a memo opposition that was put forward by the Council of Mental Hygiene Directors. They saw it as something that was overburdensome for the counties as far as the fiscal impact, and it was also an infrastructure issue for them because some counties lack methadone facilities. They have a lack of physicians who prescribe these medications. And instead of like working with us to address those really real barriers, they made an assumption that there are going to be 150 people in every county jail who would use medications at this rate. So like 50 people on methadone, 50 people on buprenorphine, 50 people on Vivitrol, which is really expensive. And then they multiplied that number together and came up with like $15 million. And then they put forward that number in the assembly, which was entirely made up, and that was enough to like scare some people in the budget department. We were able to push back against that because we were working with a sheriff out in Albany who has been doing this program since January 2019, Sheriff Apple, and he's been able to treat up to 120 people, and I think he estimated that his program cost $45,000 for that 6 months. If people are rhetorically putting forth all these statements about how much they want to end this crisis, they need to be willing to invest in the solutions that are effective.
Deanna King is a policy manager at the Drug Policy Alliance. Deanna, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.